everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. This is Jace. This is a very special episode. There's not a lot of times where I get a chance to read a first issue, and it completely exceeds my expectations. You know, I've been reading comics for a long time, you know, and I love comics. That's why I do what I do. But being around the industry for so long and having read so many number ones, and especially with the proliferation of number ones from DC and Marvel these days, constantly relaunching books, you can't help but get a little cynical. So, as I said, when I read something that completely blows me away, I feel like I need to share it with you guys. So, I'm lucky enough to have the writer of a new book that's coming out tomorrow. Well, today, as you hear this, June 22nd. The title is Action Man, and it like I said, it just blew me away. So I want to say
welcome
to John Barber, the writer of Action Man. So John, why don't you introduce yourself to the folks and give them a little bit of your history in the comic book industry.
Hi, well, I'm glad to be here. I'm glad you liked the issue. I wasn't sure, so I didn't know what I was walking into. my name is John Barber. I write a lot of Transformers comics. I read the series that's called Transformers that Andrew Griffith draws. I co-write Back to the Future with Bob Gale and Marcelo Fiera is currently drawing that one. I'm a senior editor at IDW. I work on a lot of the Hasbro books. Used to be an editor at Marvel. And I've been around for, I guess, a while and doing stuff. I'm really excited to be launching Action Man. It's kind of one of the first books that'll launch into the IDW's Revolution event that pulls together all of the a lot of the Hasbro brands into one universe. That's another series I'm working on and co-writing with Colin Bunn. I guess I keep busy.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Now, being around comics for so long and kind of, you know, growing up as a somewhat of a nerd, pop culture nerd, whatever, I'd heard of Action Man before, but I never really, you know, like I knew it was kind of some British thing or whatever. You know, yeah. I'd heard the term. I wasn't that familiar. So if there's some of our listeners out there who are kind of in the same boat that I was, can you give us the quick rundown, the history of Action Man?
Yeah. I was familiar with it from all the work I'd done, you know, working on G.I. Joe over here editorially. As I understand it, the story is that back the original G.I. Joe toys came out in the 60s, and they were, you know, whatever, 12 inches tall, I think, sort of, doll size, but they called them action figures, of course. An executive or somebody that worked at a British toy company called Palatoy came over and saw the G.I. Joe doll or the G.I. Joe action figure, brought it back, let his, you know, niece or nephew or somebody play with it, and saw how well the kid reacted to it. So he convinced the company to, like, basically license the G.I. Joe molds from Hasbro. And G.I. Joe is a super American, super specific name. So they renamed it Action Man. And then over the years, Action Man, like, really, you know, took off in the UK, and sort of G.I. Joe and Action Man both kind of fed on each other, where certain innovations would come in. Like, there's the eagle eye thing, which is like, it was like a lever on the back of the figure that would make the eyes turn left or right. There's like the sort of flocked hair, so it felt like real hair on the character. But kind of in those very early days, like, both of them were just sort of military guys. So the Action Man ones were like Royal Army regimental uniforms and stuff. Like, it was all very specific real world uniforms or you know, approximations of real world uniforms. And there wasn't really like character driven fiction about it. There were some comics, but they tended to just be, you know, army guy, in a sort of generic sense. Eventually they started doing, I'm going to skip over a bunch of stuff and probably forget like key pieces in this, but they started doing 3 3/4 inch versions of the Action Man toys that were still like specific real uniforms. So they weren't characters exactly. They were, you know, Royal Marine, or they were, you know, whatever, as I understand it. And eventually that became Action Force, and eventually Action Force became like the UK version of G.I. Joe, of the Larry Hama era G.I. Joe. So all of the American figures were sort of brought into that. So it was those characters, but depending on, I think there were original comics for the UK market, but like the cartoons would just be the same cartoon, but it would be Action Force instead of G.I. Joe. Eventually Hasbro bought Palitoy. And then I think in the mid-90s, they relaunched Action Man as a cartoon series with the live-action component. And then a few years later, they sort of relaunched it again. That one is sort of a science fiction military kind of thing. I mean, more or less in line with what G.I. Joe was, just a little bit more 90s, where the G.I. Joe was more, you know, the G.I. Joe cartoon was more 80s. In the late 90s, I think I'm getting the dates right, but they did a sort of extreme sports version of Action Man. And then the characters sort of laid dormant, and this is the 50th anniversary this year. They were looking to reissue some of the original toys in the UK and sort of, you know, try to take the brand in a new direction, I guess. But as we wound up, hopefully something that kind of embraces a lot of the history of the character. Action Man became a very distinct thing from Action Force, or always was a very distinct thing from Action Force. I'm probably misspeaking drawing them together. I don't know. That's the history of Action Man. How was that? Do we have any listeners left after after I ramble on about that for?
No, I mean it's kind of like expecting somebody to sum up the history of G.I. Joe succinctly, and you know, being that it's been around for so long and so many different iterations, you know, it's kind of hard. So
yeah,
So Action Man, basically, think of it as starting out as the British version, the UK version of G.I. Joe, but much like the G.I. Joe property, you know, has appeared in different mediums over the years, and you know, in the hands of different creators and different people, changing the direction of him and such, and trying to, you know, continually kind of refresh it for a new audience. So there have been Action Man comics in the past, correct?
Yeah.
Both British or both UK and American comics of Action Man?
I don't think there have been any American ones.
Okay.
Unless I have a big hole in my memory. I think most of the they were either sort of like very direct toy tie-in, you know, like very much putting the toys in military situations, or based on the cartoon shows, is at least as far as I'm aware.
Okay, because when I looked, I saw that there had been kind of a long running UK series by Panini.
Yeah.
That ran for like 9-10 years or so, but it was kind of different when I took a look at it. Magazine size, and so it had a few pages of a comic strip, but then it had like pages to color and activities and not something that we here in the U.S. would consider a comic book.
Yeah. I mean, you see a lot of those that sort of style of like weekly comic magazine. Like in the history of magazines in the UK, like those are, I think, more common format. I mean, even 2000 AD. It didn't have coloring pages, but it was sort of that format, you know, an anthology that came out, you know, very, very frequently,
right,
magazine size.
So first time in a U.S. comic, and it seems to me after reading the first issue that you're kind of trying to modernize the idea of Action Man and take him in a new direction as he's introduced to an American audience. Is that accurate to say?
Yeah. I mean, hopefully, you know, if you're part of the UK audience, hopefully you'll be on board too. But it's definitely, you know, it's very much a series that the UK has a different relationship with than the rest of the world. You know, like maybe as opposed to like Transformers, where I think people all over the world are aware of Transformers at this point in largely the same ways. You know. Basically the idea in the series is there have been Action Man like Action Man is sort of a role that is filled. So there have been Action Mans, Action Men in the past. You know, maybe some of the ones that you're familiar with from other other media, let's say, or previous incarnations. And the most recent one is he's an expert marksman. He's a a 10th level judo black belt. He's a 3-star Michelin chef. He's great at everything, and he gets killed on a mission. And circumstances sort of force this new kid who works with Action Man, is part of the Action Man program, but it sort of forces him to take over the mantle of Action Man before he's like fully ready for it. So he's a little over his head, and he's got like really big shoes to fill. And that's the premise.
And how did you come up with, what was the impetus for the idea of taking somebody who's a little green, let's say, isn't fully ready to step into such a big role? Was it that you wanted to introduce and in a way, it's kind of something I haven't seen done too many times. Usually when a new comic comes out, there's a character, usually it's a supporting character that's kind of our viewpoint into the world. In this, reading it, I almost felt like me being new to it and this new character being Action Man, he was almost my role into the world. And I found that very, very interesting, very engaging.
Oh, cool. That was really kind of, it isn't a story, it's a story that I think works really nicely in comics. A lot of times you have these sort of legacy characters. Growing up, like when I did, I had Wally West as the Flash, then we had the new Green Lantern, and the new Connor Hawk as Kyle Rayner's Green Lantern, and Connor Hawk as Green Arrow, and all these sort of characters that would sort of take the mantle. And at the time, it was I think intended to be a permanent thing. It wasn't. I don't think it was like a short, a specific story being told with those characters. Certainly, like Wally West was meant to be Flash from then on, until another story comes around. I'm not complaining about that or anything, but I liked that idea of that sort of young hero having to step into the role of the older hero. This is always something that sort of stuck with me, and we haven't really seen that much, lately, I guess. It's certainly, a tale as old as time, but trying to find a way, a way to modernize that and put that on something that I think was really, really needed that entry point in a lot of ways. Because what was funny, there are a lot of people that are really excited about Action Man, and they're not necessarily all excited about the same one. Like, unlike G.I. Joe, where people tend to be really excited about the 1982, Larry Hama version of G.I. Joe. The cartoon and the comic book, that's the version that really seemed to lock on and capture people's imagination. Transformers, I think, was something, just go with other Hasbro brands that I'm familiar with. Transformers is something that over the years, different iterations have hit different generations. For somebody my age, it was definitely the original 84 one, but 10 years later or whatever, it was the Beast Wars. Something that's continually refilled the audience, but by and large been part of the same continuum, if that makes sense.
Right.
Where the Action Man stuff was, very divergent. Like, if you were a fan of the original one, it was a hardcore military series. If it was the 90s cartoon, it was a sort of science fiction, a series, or the extreme sports series or whatever. These are very divergent versions of Action Man. So sort of having somebody be your POV, who's learning that world as he becomes that world. I don't know. That was an immediately engaging thing to me too. So I'm glad it kind of worked. But I just thought that was an interesting story to tell with this character. Like, you kind of could play with the legacy while still having a point into it.
Yeah. Now, are you going to try to roll in some of those different versions? Are you going to go back and be like, okay, at this point, the Action Man program was more focused on military, and then other times it was more focused on sci-fi. Are you going to try to bring in aspects of all the different iterations of Action Man that have come in the past?
Yeah, you know, there's more references to that stuff as the series goes on. So, like, if you are a fan of the stuff, you'll probably see some references and some glimpses into that. In the first issue, we established the Action Man program is even older than has been suggested before. And you know, we see really brief glimpses of some of the different versions of Action Man. So, a couple of which hardcore Action Man fans might recognize. You know, one of the things I've for better or worse been known for in Transformers is really playing with the continuity and pulling stuff in. And I don't want to make this thing. You don't have to have a master's degree in Action Man to read this, you know. But if you do know the stuff, I think there's going to be some pieces that you'll see that you might like. And you know, as time moves on, I think we'll start to see more and more of the history of Action Man and of the whole universe of these characters.
Cool. Now, did you come up with the idea for the book, or was it IDW that wanted to put out an Action Man title and then approached you, and then you came? Like, which came first?
It had come up that Hasbro was interested in doing an Action Man story, an Action Man comic, which isn't always the way. Actually, it's fairly rare that happens. It wasn't a mandate. It was just the idea kind of came up, and then people at IDW decided they really wanted to go and pursue that. And it, kind of as soon as that started rolling in, I basically pitched the 5 pages that were in Free Comic Book Day. That kind of came fully formed in my head of how you could introduce the character and where you could go with it. So it happened real quickly. But it was I think Hasbro raised the idea. IDW really wanted to do it, and I had what I thought was kind of a cool way of doing it.
So, were you at that time? Were you familiar with Action Man, or before you formed your pitch, you had to go and do a little bit of research on it?
I was mostly familiar with it in relation to G.I. Joe. From having worked on all the G.I. Joe, several of the G.I. Joe comics that IDW's put out over the last 5 years or so. I knew about the character from that. I mean, when I was a kid, I remember G.I. Joe was so popular in comic books that they started reprinting the Action Force stuff in the U.S., which you didn't really see, you know, that much in those days. So I was familiar with that part of it, but like I said, Action Force is really something pretty different than Action Man. I had a passing, a better than passing knowledge of the character. And I lived in London for a while, for about a year in London, about half a year in Cambridge, something like that. And I made a particular mission to find out about the UK comic scene and sort of the history of comics in the UK, because I don't know, I like comics a lot, and I was there, and it all made sense at the time. But I've definitely done more research, you know, since then.
Okay, now pitching this something that both you weren't quite as, I mean, obviously you weren't as familiar with Action Man as say Transformers and G.I. Joe, having grown up being a fan of those, and also being that from a standpoint of the readers you're trying to connect with, they clearly will know Transformers and G.I. Joe better than they'll know Action Man. Did you find that the process of actually pitching it to be more challenging?
Yes and no. I mean, it was a different, every pitch is a different thing. There's a certain amount of freedom in that, Hasbro very much wanted to go in a different direction. They didn't want to do, but they didn't want to just continue a previous version of Action Man. That was sort of locked in from the beginning. There was definitely something different. There's an additional pressure, I think, where it's like, I'm a huge Bond fan, right? I really like James Bond, movies, and I've read the novels and everything. And I don't like them all, but I like, I like not liking the ones I don't like, But I would feel a like a crazy particular pressure if I were an American trying to write Bond, you know, or trying to work on Bond. So there's that kind of pressure where I know there's a deserved, I think, scrutiny about that. You know, who's this American guy doing this, this, you know, more iconic British character. And it's a little funny because I don't think we have that in the US with our characters. Like, I don't think, you know, like it certainly doesn't bother me when Grant Morrison's writing Batman, right. You know, or Christian Bale's playing Batman, he's British, right?
Yes.
you know, it doesn't even enter my mind, you know, that you're going to, you know, care about that with an iconic American figure. Like, maybe if Chris Evans was an American, there'd be some raised eyebrows, but, you know, I don't know.
Well, there was a little bit of that when they cast Henry Cavill as Superman.
Yeah, I guess so, but it wasn't.
Yeah, part of that, I think, also was that, you know, Christopher Reeve was an American, did such a great job.
Yeah.
People were worried. But no, I totally understand.
That's true. Superman's probably, you know, an example of that. But I mean, it wasn't. I don't think that was a huge. I don't think that's the same controversy as you'd had if you'd cast an American to play James Bond.
Right. Oh, for sure.
You know, I mean, I think with all the controversy about James Bond casting, I think American is the one thing that nobody's suggesting.
Right. Exactly.
There is that pressure that I want to do right to the fans and do right to the UK, and you know, am I being selfish by doing this? You know, Jean-Paul Bove, who's our colorist on the series, he's been double checking my language and stuff that I'm not getting things wrong too much, or you know, Britishisms wrong, or that my slang isn't 10 years out of date or 15 years out of date from when I was there, which would be fairly ridiculous, but. So I think that was more the pressure I felt. I don't know.
All right. Yeah. What are some of the themes that you're looking to explore? I mean, the first issue, it was, you know, being that the title's Action Man, it was a lot of action, very, very enjoyable. And there was, of course, the idea that the main character feels like he's not ready. He's not quite living up, which is something that, you know, I think we've all felt at different times of our lives that we're just not, you know, doing a good job, or we're not ready to be at the stage of life that we find ourselves at. Are there any other themes that you're going to try to explore in the book that you specifically have in mind, or are you just going to kind of let it happen organically and see where the story takes you?
The whole story is plotted, you know, like we've been working on it for a while. So I know, you know, completely where it's going. It is that, you know, that sort of search for your own identity, and there has to be a lot of action. I think there has to be a lot of stuff, you know, constantly moving and constantly happening, which is Paolo Villanelli's like greatest strength is he's able to do this, some really kinetic action. I mean, I don't know how much even that comes through because it seems so effortless as he does it. But there's some really complicated moments in there. You know, there's a lot of things that are movement based, that we're in a medium where there isn't movement. You know, a lot of sort of pages where, or even panels where several things are kind of happening at once. And to the effect, hopefully, that, like, you know, Action Man is able to sort of, Like that's sort of where he lives. He's able to maneuver through these high speed, high action, you know, moments. So like the action is a big part of it. The whole idea of like heroic fiction or even more specifically, like sort of British, heroic fiction. I mean, I'm a big fan of 60s spy stuff in general. Like, I'm a huge fan of the Avengers TV show. With John Steed and Emma Peel and the Prisoner and that sort of world. So kind of playing in that sort of version of heroism. And in the UK, you had these writers, like Alistair MacLean, you know, wrote like Guns of Navarone, who were writing these World War II stories, immediately after World War II, you know, like with no, no gaps in there. And you have these sort of these prototypical versions of the heroes and the villains, where, like, if you read an Alistair MacLean series, you know, the British guys are the British guys are like, it's like, you know, He-Man or like G.I. Joe or something. They're good to a fault. Like, they'll make things difficult on themselves. You know, where the, you know, the Germans or you know, whoever they're fighting is, you know, they're like Skeletor levels of treacherousness, you know, like yes, they'll betray you at a moment's notice. And kind of diving into that and seeing how that was, like, really the origins of, like, the modern conception of how these, I don't know how to say it right, the modern conception of a lot of these brands and properties that we're so used to, you know, like, the way the G.I. Joe cartoon functions completely comes from that, you know. So sort of being able to pull that back into the themes of the series a little bit of the, you know, the legacy of Action Man and this history of the character, you know, sort of standing in for like heroic fiction in general. I don't know, this is sounding really pretentious, but it's a lot of running around and jumping and monsters and guys in armor, you know, blasting each other. You know, and then really, you know, on a personal level, it really is about Ian kind of trying to find himself in this role that he's been thrust into, where he's always, you know, he's judged against other people and judged against standards that that he never asked to be or that maybe aren't applicable to him. And trying to make peace with his own mistakes that he's actually made and that he feels he's made. Man, this comic is about everything. Let's be honest. Everything in the world is in this comic.
It's an interesting dichotomy in that you can read it on the surface and it's a lot of fun. I mean, that was the thing that struck me. You know, I probably was just past the prologue as I was reading it, and we see, you know, a few time has passed and Ian's in the role of Action Man and there's a great scene with some trains. Yeah. And when Ian enters the train and he's engaged in combat, and at that moment I kind of stopped reading it for a second and I was like, you know what, this book is just fun.
Thanks.
A heck of a lot of fun.
There's some, you know, like I say, all that, man, that's really a thing that I really want. I mean, there's one scene in there, in issue 3, I think, where it was something I came up with. I think I was, like, still in high school, and I was like, oh, wouldn't it be cool to have this action scene that was like this? It was something that was always in the back of my head, and it never fit. And as we were working on this thing, I was like, oh, man, you can do this really fun action scene that I've always wanted to do. Like, here's how it works. Like, it never worked, you know, on anything before in my head. So yeah, I mean, you definitely, you know, I want the, and he's kind of trying to be this fun action hero with sort of bad one-liners that don't really land sometimes. So I'm glad that came through. I mean, cool. Thank you.
You know, and as I continued reading, you know, I got some of what you were saying though about, you know, he you know, there's a scene where he's doing some training with somebody and he's just like, oh man, everyone's coming down on me. They don't think I'm ready for it. And, you know, he has that self-doubt. And then, you know, it's like, wow, this is just, on the surface, is a really fun comic. But as you start to get into more of the character and who Ian is, he starts to become relatable. You know, like I said before, we've all had those moments of self-doubt that, yeah, man, maybe I'm not ready. And yeah, it's not necessarily fair to be judged against other people because we're each unique and, you know, we all have our own talents and weaknesses and such. And so, I feel like if you can maintain that sense of fun, but still have, like, the character stuff, I mean, it's such a strange dichotomy, but it makes for a very, very interesting book. And if you're able to do that, and then, as you said, even kind of pull in some of the past, like you've said you've done with your Transformers books, then I think you have a real winner on your hands.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, hopefully so. Well, thank you. I have nothing to add to that. Thank you. It's very nice.
Now, you did mention, I was going to ask you about this. You did mention living over in the UK for a while. Yeah. And the feel of the book, I mean, I've never even been over to the UK, but the language and the setting, you know, it is set over in the UK. Well, I imagine that he'll be kind of traveling the world, being that it's kind of like an action spy kind of thing. But are you trying to make it have more of a British feel versus an American feel? Or are you just trying to just tell a good story? I mean, you mentioned that your colorist is British, so that probably helps.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny in comics. There's such a crossover between, you know, US and UK creators. It isn't even a thing worth, you know, mentioning most of the time. You know what I mean? What with the same language and all, it becomes really easy, you know, to have UK creators come over and work on stuff. So I don't know, it's almost something that becomes invisible, but I definitely want that flavor and sort of that, you know, the flavor of this, you know, specific type of fiction, you know, this is more of an action comic than a spy comic, but a lot of that spy fiction that I really like, you know, is always sort of UK based, and there's, you know, we're trying to make the settings specific. The we're walking down, you know, you're in real places. Like there's a scene in number one where this train goes off the tracks by, you know, Ian gets up and all of a sudden he's confronted by tigers. And like, that was a real experience with me, in that, like, if you ride the train from London to Cambridge, you do go through this actual tiger preserve. And I remember I was riding this train visiting my then girlfriend, now wife in Cambridge. And I looked out the window and there's tigers staring at me. And I'm like, what are they doing here? This tigers don't live here.
Right.
You know, and you sort of, the exaggerated version of that is what happens in Action Man. So there's little pieces like that that you try to pull out. It's almost a little, like, it's almost a joke, but they go to Guernsey in issue one, which is where James Roberts, who writes another Transformers comic, lives. And that's a fascinating place, because it's really odd, because, like it says in the comic, it's not actually part of the UK, but it's owned by the Crown. So, like, it's a whole complicated, you know, not that we get into the mechanics of Guernsey at all. It becomes a shootout in the building where Victor Hugo wrote Les Miserables, but just like those fun specific locations that are real, I think add a little bit to it. And yeah, that was always sort of the fun of the Bond movies, was getting into these specific locations. You know, probably in those days, especially at a time where transatlantic travel was even, you know, was definitely difficult, and you didn't have a little device in your pocket that let you talk to anybody anywhere in the world. Getting a little bit of a sort of a modern version of that, you know, that where, hey, now we are really interconnected. So, you know, you are going to travel to different places.
Yeah. I think it helps to give a little bit of a romantic sense of history, in the setting, because, you know, relatively, you know, if you compare our country to the UK, you know, clearly they've been around a lot longer, and it's that sense of history and that sense of, you know, they've been around so long. It does, you know, like I said, give a little bit of that romanticism feel. And as far as the scene on the train in the Tiger Preserve, man, that was so awesome. The way, I could see kind of like a reckless way to solve the situation, but man, it was just really cool. I did not see that coming. So let's talk a little bit about the artist you are collaborating with on the series. You mentioned John Paul Bove, the colorist, which I feel like the colors in this book, he's just more of a primary kind of palette, which I feel helps give it that cartoony kind of feel, which adds to the sense of fun in the book. But the action scenes, by the artist, Paolo, is it?
Villanelli.
Villanelli, yeah. Yeah. Awesome. I mean, he, with his movement lines and speed lines and such, there's such a sense of movement in these static panels, which, you know, you yourself mentioned. I mean, it, the art really just blew me away.
Yeah, he's cool. He's really good. I mean, that's definitely his biggest strength, I think. And it's an amazing strength. I mean, getting to see that, like, because you get these layouts in. It's always tricky when you're writing something where it's action based, because some artists can be very good I mean, it's true of anything. Some artists can be very good at really specific things, and you try to learn to play to the strengths of the artist and work with the artist and you know, get things that get a result that works, you know, really well. Because the comics, the author of the comic, you know, is me and Paolo, right? You know, and me, Paolo, and JP. It's not like him illustrating something. It's us working together and making this thing. But the nature of this comic is there has to be a lot of action. So, you know, I'd write these things and write these fairly complicated sequences. And Paolo, especially in the train one, he reworked it in the layouts a little bit in a way that just was much better. You know, like definitely, like it played on the page really, really clean and, you know, got across everything that I was interested in getting across, but just in a much better way. Like, I don't even remember how I wrote it. I just remember seeing those layouts, I was like, oh, that's different. That's better. That's great. You know, being really excited about it. Paolo used to work with Sarah Pichelli from Ultimate Spider-Man and Guardians of the Galaxy. And I was, I actually worked with Sarah back at Marvel on the very first, like, pages she did before. Like, she was helping out on an NYX comic that Marjorie Liu was writing. So I've known Sarah, you know, for a little bit. I think that might have been how we got introduced to Paolo. I'm not sure, but Paolo did a really cool Snake Eyes limited series that our editor Carlos Guzman edited. I think Carlos brought up Paolo for this particular series. And I was pretty excited. And then when I first saw those layouts, I was like, "Oh, this is perfect. This is great." And his art, like, he's about halfway through issue 3 now, and the art, I mean, he's actually more than halfway through, but like the most recent pages in issue 3 are just so fantastic, and just like the sense of design and the action that he's putting in there just gets better and better. You know, the character acting is getting, you know, is really good, and it's just fun. It's just a fun collaboration. So it's really nice to get to work with him, and he seems to be really digging what we're doing in this book. So I'm excited. Yeah. We're really feeding off each other.
Where's Paolo based out of?
I believe somewhere in Italy. I'm not 100% sure. I mean, I've met him a couple times, but I think only at, you know, like New York Comic Con or San Diego Comic Con.
How do you find the process? Do you guys, Skype? Do you talk on the phone? Do you just do it?
No, you know, it's funny. We didn't even really talk that much at all for the first couple issues. I mean, not out of anything. Like, we met each other, you know, I'd give my script over to Carlos. Carlos had sent it over to Paolo. Paolo would send in layouts. And, you know, lately we've been just emailing each other a little bit more. I mean, it's funny. Like, it's funny how sometimes that just works out in terms of like timing or whatever, time differences or something.
Right.
We don't talk that much, but I think we'll probably be hitting each other up more in this stuff. But I think we both have a little bit of trust built into it now. You know, we know what each other's are doing.
Yeah, well, based on the first issue, trust well founded. And now you said JP's been helping you, making sure your language is accurate and the slang and all that. So you talked to him.
Yeah, we sort of drafted him into doing read. You know, like, you know, we send everybody, you know, Carlos will send everybody a PDF of the book to check it out anyway, right, to make sure, you know, the right pages are in there in order and everything. But, you know, kind of really overlying, you know, it's been very nice of JP to jump in and kind of, you know, come in every once in a while. Like, that's not really a.
Yeah, like has he caught you? Has he caught you and needed to correct
you? Oh, yeah, there's been a couple things where I've said something that's kind of old-fashioned or things that were like really specifically like regional or time-based. I mean, there's a lot of that stuff that I'm aware of just from like talking to people and watching, you know, watching shows and you know, things. I don't know. I like paying attention to language and you know, playing with that stuff. But
language, especially when you're, you know, it's a comic that's not set in the U.S., it is something that most readers won't think about.
Yeah.
It does help to set, you know, to place the setting, place the book both geographically and chronologically. Yeah, it's something you don't notice unless it's done poorly, and then it can pull you out of the story.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I didn't want to make everybody talk like Dick Van Dyke, yeah. You know, in Mary Poppins. But you know, it's funny, 'cause you do see that sometimes, you know, even with like really good British writers, you know, every once in a while they'll be writing, you know, an American superhero comic or something, and the character will use the wrong term for something.
Right.
You know, and like, I mean, even editing, you know, some really good writers like that, like every once in a while you see those, and sometimes you want to let it go because it's such good language that they're using anyway. They're like, oh, we'd, you know, from going from Brit to British to US, every once in a while I'm like, oh man, we'd be better off if we did say that.
Yeah.
But I remember, like, when I was in the UK, I was going to grad school, and like a lot of the people in my class were from Greece. It was like a graphic design school, and a lot of them were from the UK. Like, those were the two biggest places. I remember somebody asking me to pass the Pritt stick. And I'm like, I don't know what that is. Like, the Pritt stick. I'm like, I don't know what you're saying. I don't know what that means. Like, she wouldn't say what it was. And then finally she like asked somebody else, hand me the glue stick. And I'm like, oh my God, you could have said that to me. I know what a glue stick is. I don't know what a Pritt stick is. there's always little things like that you just don't. Like, you're never going to see that in Doctor Who, right? Like, right. You're never going to catch that from watching stuff. But like, it's these real life things that we just don't even don't even think about.
Right. Now, as far as the length of the series, this is an ongoing. It's not a limited sales. You know, aside, you have a lot of stories to tell, and
we do have a lot of stories, you know, we want to do with Action Man. This is a limited series. This is a 4-issue series. Then there's a 5th issue that's part of the Revolution event. So the first storyline is 4 issues. Like, that was how it was always written. Then there'll be the Revolution tie-in, and Action Man plays he's literally the first character you see in Revolution. So he plays a role in there. And then as for what happens after Revolution, well, we'll have to wait and see. I don't mean to be cagey, but we'll have to see what.
Okay,
we'll have to see where that goes.
That's fair enough. So there may be future plans.
I certainly would love to be able to get to play with the characters some more, I think it'll be cool to see where he fits into that sort of tapestry of a world with Transformers, G.I. Joe, Mask, Micronauts, ROM, all that kind of stuff.
I'm pretty excited. I'm not a huge ROM fan. Chris Ryle and I had a great talk last week about ROM on the show. But I've seen a few people that aren't, you know, they're like, I don't understand why IDW is doing this and you know, this big crossover thing and whatever. And I can kind of see where they're coming from at the same time, but I feel like if you don't think you're going to like it, then don't read it. If you're a Transformer fan and you don't like Action Man, you don't like ROM, you don't like Micronauts, whatever, then don't pick up Revolution. Just keep reading like Transformers. It's not like because this crossover shows that all these properties exist within the same universe that every issue of Transformers is going to have Action Man or G.I. Joe or
right.
somebody you know in there. So it's like, if you don't like the TV show, change the channel.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, I can sort of understand. Like, you know, it's an interesting world that we hit. Because, like, I mean, my background, you know, was working at Marvel, and it was also, I mean, I kind of grew up, you know, I was reading, you know, Marvel and DC comics, where all the stuff is in the, you know, the same universe, and like Image, you know, the original Image stuff was all in the, you know, in a universe. Like, I was just that's something that's very natural to me. But what's interesting with something like Transformers, you know, the thing that I found immediately interesting is that there are people that don't really have an interest in comics. They have an interest in Transformers, so they want to read the Transformers comics. And that's valid. Like, I don't have any, I mean, that's cool. Like, that's great. And there's probably a lot more people like that now than there were, you know, reading comics 15 years ago. Where I feel like now you could sort of legitimately be a Captain America fan and not have read a comic, you know, like there's enough Captain America fiction out there. You know, whereas like when I was a kid, if you were a Captain America fan and you weren't reading the comics, I mean, what in the world were you interested in? Like, there wasn't anything. There were two TV movies that had nothing to do with Captain America in the 70s. So I sympathize in a way, you know, I sympathize with those readers that are worried that we're going to come in and you know, take away all the stuff they like about Transformers. I don't think that's true. I think we're going to be, I think you'll still be really well served if you're just a Transformers fan. And I think it's going to, like, to me, it just opens up so many more story possibilities, and so many more, you know, interesting and fun relationships you can create between characters, where it's, like writing a Transformers series, no matter how much work I put into like a human organization, and I have put a lot of work into it, it's always going to be Transformers and Friends. But when that other organization can be, you know, can be Action Man, can be G.I. Joe, can be ROM or something, those are things with a lot of conceptual weight and their own fan base and their own comics and everything. So even if it's sort of fulfilling the same role, you can have this thing where it's got this greater weight to it in universe, that it's almost, you know, it doesn't just get completely steamrolled by the Transformers part of it, which is a fun like challenge to write. You know, like, that's positive for the Transformers because it means they get they're up next to other things that will help raise them up. You know, instead of having, you know, I don't know. That's how I look at it. I couldn't be more excited about this. so I'm really excited that it's happening. And I think, you know, anytime there's any kind of change, especially if it's change about something you like, you're legitimately worried we're going to throw out the stuff you like. And I don't think we're going to. So I think everybody, you know, for the most part, will be pleased.
Yeah, I'm excited to see, you know, what the story is. You know, I've seen other complaints, people saying, well, you know, and this story in Transformers, the Decepticons practically wiped out the humans. If G.I. Joe was in the same, like, universe, why didn't they help then? And whatever. I'm like, can we just wait and see what the story is? can we just not, like, condemn it before it's actually on the stands and we check it out, you know?
Yeah.
You know, have a little faith. Benefit of the doubt. That's all I'm saying. So, you mentioned G.I. Joe. I'm sorry, you mentioned Transformers you've been working on. You have Action Man. Any other projects that we should be looking for in the future?
Yeah, I'll have some stuff to talk about soon, but I really can't bring it up right now. I mean, Revolution, yeah, that's the other big one that I'm working on with this stuff. But I'm definitely keeping busy, and I've got some cool stuff coming out.
Yeah, coming up shortly. I think this is the time of year when everyone has to be a little cagey. San Diego coming up. I know a lot of companies like to
the what?
Yeah,
yeah. We're definitely have that looming down on us.
Yeah,
in a good way.
Well, you know, listeners, I barely contacted John yesterday. Sent the email out last week. Didn't get a response till yesterday. So, man, I really want to thank you for coming on the show at you know, basically a half a day's notice. I really, really appreciate it, man. Listeners, get out there today. Buy Action Man number one. I give you my personal guarantee that it is a fun, great comic. I can't wait for issue two. Yeah, just, I think it is definitely worth picking up. It is a lot of fun, and in a way, I would almost say an all ages book. Obviously, there's, you know, comic book violence, whatever. But, you know, if you have probably a son or a daughter around 7 or 8, man, it's going to be right in their wheelhouse. Just a really fun book, but also some themes of self doubt and some characterization that I think we could all relate to that makes it a great for older readers as well. So, thanks a lot, John. Really appreciate the time, man.
Thanks for having me on. This has been great. I appreciate this.
All right. And just a reminder, if you want to follow along with the Comic Source, the best thing to do, go to our website, comicsourceblog.com, for all past episodes of the podcast. You can watch episodes of our YouTube channel there. You can check out Manny's written blog, my written blog, and, of course, our famous sketch gallery. And the best way to keep up to date with everything that's going on as far as guests on the show and when we release new episodes is to follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. You can also do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram. That's us. Instagram is a great way to keep up to date with conventions. When we're at conventions, we put up a lot of pictures and photos when we're doing interviews and cosplay and all that crazy stuff. So you can find us there. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening. I want to thank John for being our guest. And get out there and pick up Action Man, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.